Super Gaming Best Friends. Super Gaming Best Friends. Monkey throwing barrels. Hunting ducks with dogs of scenarios, and we'll play with you.
It's Wednesday, February 6, 2013, and you're listening to Super Gaming Best Friends, the video game podcast from HorribleNight.com. I'm your host, Justin Lacey. Not able filling in tonight for the absent Josh Lee of JoshLee.com fame, but luckily I have Ethan Moses with me tonight.
Good evening.
And Aaron McNeil.
Hey, ladies. Oh, no, I'm not supposed to do that, sorry.
No, that's, yeah. Are you paying attention to the right Skype chat?
I don't know.
We always need to have one over-sexualized person, so that's Aaron for this evening.
Ethan's roles. Looking sexy.
I had my notes wrong then. So I don't know what role you're going to be playing, Ethan. What do you think?
It's usually the doofus.
The doofus. I'll play the scholar, the part of the scholar then.
All right.
The gentleman.
So if this was a teen slasher movie, I would be the first one to die then, correct?
Uh-huh.
Fuck.
I'm just jumping to conclusions here. What'd you guys, Ethan, you were in Germany while a big sporting event was going on in the United States. What the hell was that like?
I mean, I didn't watch it. I wasn't really too interested in either of the teams, but actually people here watch the Super Bowl. It's actually on TV. There's some bars that have it on, and it's on the German cable, and I don't have German cable, so I don't know. I was pretty indifferent towards it. I realize that we always get, like last year it was exciting because it was in Indy. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we always get so excited about the Super Bowl, but when you don't have a team in it, it's almost like, I'm not going to put that much effort into it. I'll watch it. I would have had to put way too much effort into watching it this time, so I was like, I'm just going to skip that. But people thought I was like a total doofus. I mean, total doofus. Oh, you're not watching the Super Bowl? You're not American.
You're the doofus. Well,
I'm not going to stay up till 3 o'clock, man. Or 2 o'clock. Too late. I have to do that once a week anyway. I reserved it for this, so.
I was going to say, it was going to be 3 o'clock with that power outage anyway, but.
Yeah,
Aaron and I have agreed as social networking aficionados that some of Twitter's finest work took place during the power outage during the Super Bowl, and I think I can retire from Twitter now. It's not going to get any better than like my entire feed was people just making one-liners after one-liners, and then combine that with the fact of how bad the live coverage was during that time because they're just doing recaps. I was like, just go to Twitter and read stuff. That's going to be it's going to entertain the crowd. And then they finally got back to the regular announcers, and somebody was saying he had 30 minutes to prepare his opening joke, and it was terrible. He's just like, next time you plug in your cell phone, let us know. And it was
oh, that was his joke? That was his welcome back to the – wow.
They lost me at that point.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's – what ended up being the reason for the blackout?
They said it was something outside, but it was. I think it was Beyonce.
Squirrels.
Squirrels. You think
it was Beyonce.
Voodoo.
Yeah, Stevie Wonder Voodoo. Mm-hmm. Just knocked it out.
Was Stevie there?
He had a couple commercials.
Commercials.
Oh, yeah. Did he? Okay. Yeah.
I wonder what that's like as far as what the Super Bowl ad buying is over in Europe, like. If that's a thing, do they get our commercials? Do they get?
You know, that's a really good question. I actually need to look into that because that's usually the most exciting part of the Super Bowl. And I mean, people don't like American football here that much, you know.
Right.
So I'm like, well, maybe not. I mean, maybe they're not. I mean, maybe there's like five people that watch it, you know. So I don't know. I don't know if they spend as much money on those because you basically again have to stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning to watch a sport that you more or less, you know, don't give a shit about. And if your team wasn't in it, then you definitely don't care. So
well, let's get to the video games, gentlemen. We kick things off with our on the spot question. You can write in each week to ask@horriblenight.com and ask us your question. This week's question comes from Gray Goldblum, who just wants us to react simply to a recent quote from one of the producers of Resident Evil. I'm going to go ahead and read this, and we'll see if Ethan explodes by the end of it. this is I'm going to butcher the name, Masashika Kawata. We're going with that.
That's it, dude. You got it.
All right. he's answering a question about going open world. He said, if we did go with an open world, we would want to preserve what Resident Evil is and what makes it appealing to fans, while also making it accessible to new players. It would almost entail having a slight reboot to get the series into a place where it would work with an with open world gameplay. That's just a personal opinion. A lot of decisions would have to be taken before something like that is done to the series, but it is something that there is a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
The words reboot and open world Resident Evil, where's your head at right now?
Oh, that's tantalizing. I mean, that here's the way I look at it right now is, and again, I haven't played Resident Evil 6 quite yet, but I mean, from all accounts, they screwed the pooch on that game. So they almost have to reboot at this point. And so obviously they didn't get, you know, the sales they wanted, and maybe they didn't get the fans they wanted by making it over-the-top action. So open world is kind of the next step in terms of bringing in a whole lot of people, because again, that whole idea is mouthwatering, you know, oh, it's an open world, there's all kinds of freedom we could have. It could be really, really cool. I mean, it really could. Like there's so much to the Resident Evil universe, so many different monsters and all that kind of stuff. I mean, they definitely could do something really cool with it. But are they the people to do it? I don't know. Maybe slide that franchise off to, you know, a young and hungry studio, or a studio that's pretty good at doing open world games, because I'm not 100% sure if they have what it takes to put all that together without just getting really stupid and zany with it like they did again in Resident Evil 6. So, but holy shit, yeah, I mean, kind of got a nerd boner over that idea, but I'm not gonna hold my breath, you know.
Aaron, what do you think?
I don't know how to feel about an open world Resident Evil. It could be a fun thing. They could do it good. Maybe if they pass it off to another developer, like Ethan said, but I don't trust Capcom to take Resident Evil into an open world and make it something that people are going to, you know, just rave about in the streets. Dragon's Dogma, I like that, but it's still broken in certain places. But it's
Mr.
fun
Dave
despite
in Resident Evil.
Mr. Dave, Resident Evil, those I would buy that game, but just a resident, you know, Leon Kennedy and running around in the open world, it just seems kind of bizarre to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I got linked to this by the word reboot being in the title, so somebody mentions Resident Evil Reboot, and I did not expect to see open world in the same kind of thought process there, because that's definitely not where I would take it. But I also kind of want to know, Ethan, you wrote an article a while back about how Resident Evil just needs to embrace that it's more of an action game now and just go all out and kind of meet up with where the movies have been. Mm-hmm. Which route would you rather see them take, an open world Resident Evil or your just straight up action game over the top?
Well, I think the open world Resident Evil would actually probably lend itself to that kind of idea.
Okay.
You know, when writing that, I kind of thought, okay, if they're going from 6 and they're going off the momentum or lack thereof with 6, they have to go complete goofy. Mm-hmm. Not considering the fact that the reboot may happen. In my opinion, if you reboot the series, I see those as two paths. You know, you do the open world, over the top, zany game with hella action. You know, all the characters coming together, Barry Burton flying a helicopter, Leon Kennedy, Chris Redd, everybody just grouped together doing all kinds of fun stuff. Or you reboot the game, you take it back to, you know, 1998, 1999, that area. I love what they did with Resident Evil Operation Raccoon City. I know nobody else liked that game. I liked it. I liked being back in Raccoon City because there's a lot of again, mythology built around that city, and once they lost that, it kind of like didn't have the same effect. So I say, go back to Raccoon City. Let's see it from someone else's perspective. Let's not be in Stars, you know. Let's be some fucking random dude, and let's go there. So I don't know. I mean, I want both of those games, you know, to see which one comes out on top, I guess. But he's 100% right. Do we trust Capcom to make a good decision? Because sometimes they make zany decisions like Dragon's Dogma, and it turns out okay, but then they do things like Resident Evil 6, and it's not great. So I don't know.
I'm with you guys on I don't necessarily trust them, but now I wonder what they're thinking as kind of early reports are coming back in about the initial sales of Devil May Cry. with they handed that off to new studio, did a little bit of a reboot there, and it shipped half the amount of copies as Devil May Cry 4 did. Mm-hmm. And it still doesn't really give you an expectation of what the numbers were, and then the PC version just came out, but still, yeah. Like, I know whatever we think about Resident Evil 6, it's still, you know, it's their tentpole, it's the thing they rely on for a lot of their money outside of Monster Hunter, and so I wonder if they'd be willing to take that risk. I kind of hope that, honestly, they don't even know when they start making the next Resident Evil game, you know, kind of where, you know, Devil May Cry got its origins as the beginning of Resident Evil 4. I kind of hope, mm-hmm. like, some other team within Capcom starts to make a weird zombie-based Dragon's Dogma expansion, and that turns into Resident Evil by accident kind of thing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's the best scenario.
Yeah, and then they just call that a reboot. That might be the kind of the best scenario. Yeah. But I don't think, you know, when you look at the quote-unquote success of, like, DayZ and an open-world zombie environment, like, getting some AAA money behind something like that and having new ideas or, you know, Eastern-influenced ideas to gameplay like that, that could be interesting. I think I had my mind so set on a pure survival horror experience, I never really wanted to go outside of that with Resident Evil, but I could be intrigued, I hope they take this new console generation that's on the brim here that and actually do reboot this and start this over, because I don't know what you get by making a Resident Evil 7 unless I'm kind of on board with Ethan and that unless you just go over the top with it and just keep it going. But I think there's more to reel it back in and, you know, make a spin-off action game with what they were doing with that engine, and I think that'll sell well for Capcom too, but don't necessarily call that Resident Evil.
Don't make us play it if we don't want to. Give us a choice. I mean, that was the thing. I mean, Operation Raccoon City, I liked that idea because to me it was like, okay, Resident Evil 6 is going to be, you know, your normal Resident Evil game, and Operation Raccoon City is this little different little nugget, you know? But then they basically were the same little nugget, and that's just kind of, I don't know, it's like, give us a choice, you know? Fuck up the franchise on this side, but then let everybody come back and be like, that was weird, but let's stick with how things should be. So, I don't know. I don't know. That series, that was just, it's been disappointing, I think. I just don't know what direction it could possibly go in. Like,
at least I know that these conversations from this quote, they're obviously, at least they're happening within Capcom. So,
yeah.
And Capcom will be, I think they'll be in an interesting place next generation as far as that they may or may not, it'll kind of be like a make or break generation for them. Because mm-hmm. if you look at like all the other companies that like, you know, Namco, Bandai joining together, Square Enix joining together, Capcom and Konami are still kind of out there on their own. But
yeah.
How many like misfires can they have? And I'm not wishing ill will on them, but you've always got to be fighting to stay relevant. And I want to see what their next big thing is. And I hope they do something with Resident Evil that we all find interesting. So
yeah, they could do a Sims crossover. Resident Evil Sims.
Gosh.
Hey, I would actually play that.
don't give that idea to EA. I bet. Yeah. I'd be looking to snatch that up. But thanks for writing in, Gray Goldblum. We appreciate the question. We always enjoy talking Resident Evil. But we are here tonight to discuss the games that we have been playing because that is what everybody wants to know. And so, Aaron McNeil, it's been a while.
Yeah.
What have you been playing?
I got Ni No Kuni on Friday after trying to hold out as much as I can on buying games knowing that like Dead Space 3 and Sly Cooper are coming out.
So I'm
like,
a week and a half is your limit?
I'm poor.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I don't last. I've got just poor will. But
before you get going, did you buy it on disc or did you get it through PSN?
I bought it on disc. Okay. I sat down and saw, I don't have to leave the house to get Ni No Kuni. That's great. And then I saw it wanted like 24 gigs or something.
Yeah. 20 gig download took me a full 12-hour day to
get that to play. I was like, no, sir. And even trying to clear out space on my PS3 was ridiculous. I got barely enough and then decided this is not worth it. I'll just go buy the game. I'd rather spend gas than know my hard drive is empty or I need to buy another one. So I started that Friday afternoon, and I know most RPGs tend to start, you know, kind of slow. You're building up into it, but I'm in the double digits now, and I'm liking it. I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Double digit levels or double digit hours played?
Double digit hours played. Also, yeah. Double digit levels.
Okay. I'm like in the 20s. I guess
yes.
The
answer is yes.
Sounds good.
Dub dubs, and I like the Pokemon aspect of it.
That's
just
weird.
Collecting things and the fact that it's got a guide in the game that wizards. Whatever the hell. The Wizard's Book, I'm going to call it, because I don't want to think of the other word.
I guess the Special Edition had a actual printed version of that Wizard's Guide. And it is, I mean, it looks like something straight out of Harry Potter. Like, and there's a lot of care that went into it. It is gorgeous and ridiculous, and I wish I had bought one, but and never used it.
I wish I had one, but I'm fine using the cheap man's version, the cheap man's PDF in the game, whatever you call it. But I played for so long just barely referring to it, thinking, oh, I don't want to read through this book. And it eventually, like, you get to a part where you need to go through the book to do something.
Oh.
And so I'm like, okay, I'll do that. And then next thing I know, I spent like 20 minutes looking up the familiars, the Pokemon of the game, and I'm like, holy crap, it tells me what they evolve into and then what moves they learn, and I'm just flipping through this thing and I'm like, wait a minute, I'm reading a book in a game when I could be grinding for levels. Like, no progress is being made. I'm just reading the book now.
You're grinding with nothing to show for it.
Yeah, I have nothing to show for it, just knowledge of the game world.
Just knowledge. All that just knowledge. All that video game playing, man, that could be infusing you with so many powers, and
I could
instead
be leveling up and killing monsters left and right. Instead, I'm learning.
Well, yeah, that's kind of leveling up in a way. So
kind of.
It's so funny to hear people talk about this game, because every time they say, you know, oh, I get myself some Ni No Kuni, I just feel like, man, just say sex. Just say sex. Like, we're all adults here, you know. Like, you don't have to, you know,
use the big boy terms.
Yeah, exactly.
Ni No Kuni on the side.
Yeah,
I'm actually kind of hoping that the politicians get up in arms about the fact that some of these games like this are accidentally making gamers learn. I think that's the next big controversy. Is,
oh yeah,
they're forcing us to learn or tricking us into learning when we don't really want to.
Yeah,
we would just play the Pokemons.
Like, if Call of Duty had a big encyclopedia in it during multiplayer, and like, no one's shooting each other anymore, there would be no more like gun violence in games. Like, we're all reading books, and that's how we're winning.
Yeah.
Get this chapter the fastest.
As long as there's an alternative creationism mode to any of these games, politicians wouldn't be too upset about it. No science. Keep the science out of it.
It actually did remind me a bit of the Codex from Mass Effect. Like, as far as like, oh shit, I could. My afternoon could be this if I'm not careful. So I shut that book quickly, because, you know, reading through a codex is one thing, because it's more like a website to me, which I'm fine with reading websites, but
yeah,
this Wizard's Guide, it looks like a book, and I will not be tricked into reading a book.
Looks like a book.
What if you actually became a wizard, and you were going to be given these powers, and they handed you a Wizard's Guide, a literal Wizard's Guide? Would you still not read it?
I would read that.
I would somehow come up with a spell so I didn't have to.
There's got to be a spell to just learn everything.
I don't want to read so bad.
I mean, at that point, you have so much power. You should. You don't think that'd be too far-fetched.
I'm talking about like a beginning wizard. Are you a wizard now that you have the ability? You walk in and say, look, guys, I don't need that guide. I don't even know why I'm going to wizard school. I should graduate early because I know all this shit. I know this spell that makes it so I don't have to read.
But you know,
really? That's how powerful you are.
You know, back in like high school, Ethan knows this, at least from our local schools. They, you know, they had the path where you could choose to do the accelerated English courses. And the thing that stood out was they make you read over summer break. And I was like, hell no, I'm not going that path. So no, if I knew that in this wizard school that eventually I was going to be forced to read this giant wizard's book, I think I'd choose a different profession. Like, I would be looking for more like a supernatural power that you just innately, you get it. You just have it. You don't need to learn how to use it. You know what I mean?
A wizard's artist. You'd be like the painter of the wizarding world. Just play guitar in the fields.
Yeah.
I just feel like you will lose control of your wizard powers and they will take over your body. And then you'll be like, you know, the very first hero from Diablo who actually ends up being Diablo in Diablo 2 because he just can't control it. It's inside of you and you have no control.
You should have read the guide.
Eventually I will read.
So that's how villains are formed. They don't read the instructions.
They don't read the book.
I'm learning about myself here. This is,
we're all bad.
I mean, I've put on my business card that I'm the final boss of Horrible Night, but I've never really thought of it that way.
You thought of yourself as like the good final boss.
Yeah,
the one that like you fight through all of his minions. He's like, whoa, this was a huge misunderstanding.
Yeah,
what were my guys doing? I had no communication with them. Yeah.
So besides the what do you like about the Pokemon stuff? Explain that a little bit for everybody.
It's just so complicated and almost needlessly so, but I like it anyway. Whereas like Pokemon. Like, there's a fire type and a water type, and this one, they have dual types all the time, but it's more like they have signs. So it's like astronomy stuff going on. So they've got, like, suns and moons and stars, and I had to read the guide to figure out what that even meant.
Yeah, yeah, I haven't gotten that far, but they just started introducing, like, I have two familiars. I'm probably, like, 8 hours in, and I see the signs on screen, but I haven't, like, notice that they mean anything yet, but I've heard that the battle system in Ni No Kuni is going to be what makes or breaks it for you.
Yeah.
And in that regard, you know, to me, it's just a classic Japanese RPG, and the people that have been kind of throwing rocks at it for, you know, having a quirk that makes it hard to play or may or may not be broken because of it. Like, that's just, they all kind of had that, and I kind of give it a pass for it. Like, this is what I signed up for. I don't know what you were expecting.
I knew it was there, and I like it now.
Yeah.
But, so it's funny that I talk about the guide just because I was curious, like, what do these suns and moons mean? Do they actually matter at all? And I was about to pause the game, put the controller down, and then get on the computer to look this up. And I was like, wait a minute, there's a guide in the game, so I should just look and see if it has something about this. And sure enough, it did. And it explains it pretty well, but, I mean, Drippy, that the little fairy guy that follows you around, he just pretty much is like, read the book, you idiot. You know, he doesn't want to tell you anything. He knows everything about the world you're in, but he's like, read the book, you know. He's pretty much telling you to Google. Google it yourself.
Well, I mean, you got to give it to Mr. Drippy. He gives you some long-winded tutorials. Like, they ease you into the game, like, almost too slowly. And he's like the one always giving you explanations of the new systems as you've come across them. So I'm sure he does not want to repeat himself. And like, I have given you the foundation, like you've got to learn yourself and, you know, do your homework. I would want to find a way out. I would want to find the cliff notes or whatever. I understand that like, he can't do it all for you. He's just one Mr. Drippy.
He's just one Lord High King of the Fairies or whatever. Lord High Lord of the Fairies. I love that he says the title nonstop. He always says the whole thing.
And best part about him, though, still is his voice acting is, I guess it's
an accent.
It's a Welsh accent.
I believe it.
It's a phenomenal character. He's hooked me.
The teddy bear? Is this the teddy bear?
He's a little stuffed animal thing with a... He looks like a... What does he look like? He looks like a...
He looks like a glob of snot with a...
with a lantern on his nose.
On his nose.
Yeah. Does that help, wow. Ethan?
I thought Cole was talking about a teddy bear.
He was like a stuffed animal for the kid, and then like when he wakes up and becomes like in real life, like he's an actual little character. But it's not so a teddy bear exactly, but he's a stuffed animal at one point, and then...
He gets out of it.
Yeah.
He's like... this child needs an image that won't give them nightmares. I'm going to be a teddy bear. And then, you know what? Fuck that. I'm just going to turn into a big thing of snot.
No, he looks like just a
snot.
Weird stuffed animal version of himself, of the snot. But, you know.
Don't imagine he sold well, but I don't know.
Like the main character's mom made him, and it's like the ugliest thing that I could have ever seen. Like, if my mother had given me this as a child, and then I went through what Oliver, the main character, went through, I would still think this toy is the ugliest thing my mother has ever done.
We like to rip on Ethan's giant brothers, especially the older one, Nathan, that is much more in touch with his emotions. He would not have made it through this intro, Ethan. It is
Up?
It is gut wrenching. Yes. Yeah. It is like up.
Yes.
Tears will be shed. And I was just like, I was so mad at the game. I was like, why are you making me feel like I'm gonna play this
making
game?
Making me read, making me feel. What's next? You're gonna make me be nice.
Pay your taxes,
you, man. Okay, they do make you be nice. One of the key
our game
concepts of this game is basically fixing people's broken hearts. Like, you'll come with the first one you come across. Like, so it's also important to note, like, there are two realms in this game. There's the real world, Earth realm, or whatever we want to call it, that we all live in, and that's where your character comes from. And then Mr. Drippy, the fairy king, is from this other kind of parallel realm, and you can get a spell that you can go back and forth. A majority of the game takes place in the fantasy realm, but it's important to know that you come from the real world. So you're learning your magic in this fantasy realm. And yeah, one of the first things you kind of come across is you see these two guards at the first town that you have to get into, but they won't let you in because the guard that, like, lets people in is really, really downtrodden. He's brokenhearted. And the other guard, like, is, like, doing jumping jacks and, like, won't stand still. And you come to find out, like, you basically need to, take the enthusiasm from this really peppy guard and give the really downtrodden guard one to fix his broken heart, because his heart no longer has enthusiasm. And, like, there's all these different, like, types of, you know, traits like that you need to share. That's how you, like, fix these people. Yeah. But
kindness.
That's kind of nice. But I have a question, though. That's kind of weird. Because, Justin, you usually play kind of the asshole in games. Is there, like, a good and evil spectrum on this?
No.
Like, can you make people go from happy to sad or anything like that?
Yeah, their enthusiasm.
I'm okay when they only give you that one track. Like, if I know.
Oh, okay.
But if I, like, had the option of being evil, who knows what I'd do to these people's hearts.
Yeah.
Like,
that sounds, oh man.
I mean, it would be like
a serial
Temple of Doom type shit. That's the other option.
Either, yeah, cure their hearts or take them out. Just rip them right out. They don't need them. Oh boy. This game does sound whimsical. I mean, again, that was the title of you know, last week's show. It was so full of whimsy and sounds very, very full of whimsy. So, or wait, no, that was Super Gaming Best Friends 2 weeks ago. Yeah, either way.
So, Aaron, are you going to be able to stick with this game? Are you going to jump to other games? What's going to happen with Ni No Kuni? Because that's why I played it my first day and loved it. And I was like, I know I can't get into this yet. Like, it's just not. I didn't want to get halfway through it, because then you kind of have to stick with it. And so I didn't cross that line. Where are you at?
I'm worried. I started it thinking, I've got the weekend, Super Bowl's on Sunday, maybe I'll still be able to play some, but I don't know what's going to happen come tomorrow, release day Tuesday. I don't want to lose my Ni No Kuni knowledge from that Wizard's Guide. But
The one thing it has going for it is it's different. You're in a different mindset when you're playing an RPG like this. So, you know, you're taking it up against Dead Space 3, and then Aliens Colonial Marines is the next game coming out next week that might get in your way as well. So at least you'd have to be in a different mood. But
yeah.
But also, I found, like, it's hard to play short play sessions of this game. Like, I want to do a dungeon at a time, and those are like 60 to 90 minute commitments. I don't like to, you know, just find a save point and have to redo certain areas. So that's why I've struggled to pick it up. Not that I don't enjoy the game. It's that it's a time commitment. So just kind of know that going in.
I had a great like vegetation weekend with this. I just plopped on the couch, got comfortable, and let's watch the sun rise and set as I play Nino Kuni.
Nice. So that's romantic.
It is. Just you and Nino Kuni and Mr. Drippy.
I know in my household the look of this game kind of got some attention from both my girlfriend and her daughter, just because she thought it was the younger one thought it was a cartoon and loved Mr. Drippy. So
it's a beautiful game, though.
Yeah, like has I don't know what your wife's affinity for gaming is, but has this caught her eye at all?
It's hard to say. It's grabbed her attention. She's looked at it, but has not said anything about what I'm doing. Right. Nor she hasn't questioned it, so that's good. She's like, "Why are you playing this cartoon? This children's looking cartoon? Yeah. Why is everyone so happy?" And she hasn't said any of that. But there was a particular scene. I'll try not to spoil, but anime voice actors get really into their characters, and there's a certain character that is missing restraint. Let's say
it's a dial it so back.
Yeah, so she really wants something. And the noises she makes during that scene, my wife couldn't see the screen, but the noises she's making were borderline, maybe pornographic if you didn't know the context.
Oh, all right.
So you're just hearing like, like these noises, but more feminine, sure. And I'm in the room going, what is going on? Why are these sounds coming out of my TV?
Oh, man.
And she's like, what's happening in there? And I'm like, mind your business. It'll be over soon. So that was the main interaction between her and the game. So maybe not the best foot forward.
I wonder if scenes like that make people more uncomfortable than... like just the straight up sex scenes in Far Cry 3. Like, you know, if it's just like kind of more, you understand
those
what's
are
going
easier
on.
To explain. If I just say, oh, you know, there's a tribal lady grinding on me right now, it'll be over in a moment. Versus, you know, what's happening in Ni No Kuni. I don't want to get deep into the whole world. Well, Mr. Drippy wants me to do this, and we have to go into this place. I don't want to go that far into. Explaining what I'm doing.
I don't want to know what a Mr. Drippy is.
Don't tell me about snot.
What else you been playing?
I was able to knock out The Amazing Spider-Man last week. I got it rental, Gamefly. Always good for those games I probably wouldn't have bought but wanted to play. And I sound like I'm doing a pitch right now. But it's actually a pretty good game for not kind of movie tie-in, but movie sequel.
Yeah.
And so it's really fun. I haven't really enjoyed a Spider-Man open world game since Spider-Man 2, and that was based on the movie. The web swinging was really good in that game, but I feel like Beenox knocks it out of the park on this one. It's a lot more stylistic. It pretty much feels the same, and that the web rush is maybe the highlight of the entire game, in that you can kind of slow down time. Spider-Man will see his the opportune places to actually web sling to, where he can perch on a flagpole or land on top of a water tower.
So they did a good job of making you feel like Spider-Man?
Yeah, you really feel like Spider-Man. It's a rush to play, and there's just collectibles and stuff all around Manhattan for you to do, and it's just a joy to get from one place to another, and it doesn't really feel like... It kind of captures that MMO feeling of maybe Guild Wars 2 is a good example, where so much stuff is going on and you can just take part in anything. Spider-Man's got the story. It's all right. But there's so much happening in the open world that I would be headed towards an objective and all of a sudden a comic book page would fly by. And I'm like, well, I got to catch this one. And then I'd see another one. I'm like, well, I got to get that one. And then I'd be really nearby someone getting mugged. And I'm like, well, I got to punch that dude's face in. And so
sounds like... Ethan's trips out of the house.
Ethan's journeys in Germany. It's just one thing after another happens, and you're just having a good time. So it was a really good game, and I feel kind of embarrassed I passed up on it. I really love the Spider-Man character, but on the other hand, it only lasted me a few days before I was kind of ready to move on. So it was a great rental.
Yeah, I was gonna say, because it's definitely not like your $60 immediate purchase, but I never heard anything terrible about the game. I don't think everything I heard was this is the best it's been since Spider-Man 2. But when I think back to Spider-Man 2 and I hear open world Spider-Man games, like I get kind of anxious or worn down by some of their ideas of just like the random tasks you can do throughout the city. Like, did you mainline it or did you, and you've been playing Sleeping Dogs, you've been playing some open world games. Like, yeah. how was the open world flow? Did you just kind of just mainline it, but hit up things along like that were close by, or did you find yourself going after all the side stuff?
Pretty much I put myself into a mindset of if I'm getting bored with something, I'm going to move on to something else. And so if a story mission happens, I'll go do it because it unlocks things and helps you kind of progress your powers. But if, you know, a comic book page flies by, if there's a car chase happening, I'll go after it. If I'm feeling in the mood for, I kind of want to do something different, just give myself the variety. And so it's possible to kind of put yourself into a position where you do a story mission, knock out as like all the other objectives that pop up, and then do the next story mission. And it kind of maybe even plays in that way where things are held behind invisible barriers until you get farther in the game. But I never would do all the side missions before continuing the next story mission. I kind of just, if I'm near the start of the mission, I'll go to it. Mm-hmm. And I kind of just, or I'd swing around until I felt like I needed to get my life on track. Peter Parker needs to get his priorities right.
That's like every open world game with me. Like, I almost feel like they have to fence me into doing the storyline missions, because if not, like, I'll just, you know, just be so freaking distracted. I mean, like Sleeping Dogs, I'll just go off, you know, in a different direction. I can only imagine if I'm Spider-Man and I could just whip around the city. I'm sorry, dude. Sorry about all the crime, but I'm busy here. I'm doing some fun stuff over on this side of the city. So like I can only imagine how distracting that would be.
It was like my when I tried to use Red Dead to teach myself how to play poker. Like, there are other things going on. You don't need to play 20 hands of poker right now.
That's the funny thing about open world games. It's just that they'll always have that problem of urgency until someone figures it out.
And I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you do that, because some of that onus is on the player and not the designer. Yeah. Like you want these options, but then if you get bored with those options, you think the game's bad. But yeah, anyway. Also, is the fighting system, is it reminiscent of Batman, of the Arkham games? Is that?
It's like a simplified Batman. It tries to get some complexity to it, but I believe Batman worked that you would punch on a guy, build up your combo, and eventually be able to do something more badass, like, you know, snap his arm or flip him around or just all sorts of madness. Spider-Man, I got into the habit of, and then you get upgrades that make the combo requirements lesser. Mm-hmm. So by the end of the game, 6 punches, and I could just immediately insta-kill every thug, you know, around me. And they try to, like, combat it by, you have to, like, stun them first, and some enemies would block and try to break the combo. But once you get a hang of it, maybe 10, 15 seconds, a room full of dudes could be cleared by one Spider-Man.
Did you ever feel in danger at the beginning of the game, like, till you got that stuff down?
Yeah, okay. At the beginning of the game, I found myself in several instances. Even towards the end, they have some enemies that are kind of troublesome, but my screen would flash red quite often, and you've got a move called Web Retreat, where Spider-Man pretty much whips himself into some random corner of the room or the area, and enemies might not know where he went. And sometimes it's funny because with like the web rush I mentioned before, it was almost the same thing, just a little more manual. But if you would web rush to a spot, the enemies are like, Spider-Man's right there. But if I just randomly web retreated somewhere, they're like, where'd he go? So like they can follow me if I manually choose a spot. But if the game chooses it, they, where am I? And there's a little bit of stealth, like in Batman, too. You can sneak in the shadows and you do instant stealth takedowns. And those get to be kind of funny, too, as a room full of 8 guys suddenly becomes 2 guys having a conversation in the corner, completely oblivious to the fact that they're, you know, their buddies are tied up to the ceiling right now.
Oh, that's the best part of stealth games. I mean, it's like a group of friends that really doesn't like each other that much. So when they like drift off at the, you know, in the beginning, you know, in the middle of a party, they're like, ah, it's, you know, where's Steve at? Ah, he probably took off. Steve's a dick anyway. Don't worry about him.
He stepped out for a smoke. He'll probably be back in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I won't look for him. Don't worry about it.
What else you been playing?
After that, Josh playing Mr. Dave in Dragon's Dogma, I played a little bit more of that game again after months of not touching it, and it was a lot better than it was the last time I played. And I don't know if it was just by, you know, pure circumstance that I left myself at the start of a dungeon the last time I played, but it just, my main gripe with that game is just the traveling, walking the same paths again and again. I might have set myself up for some of that, but I could tell you where certain goblins will appear as if it was, you know, my duty in life just to know where goblins appear in Dragon Dogma is. But I started in the dungeon and was going through it, and I'm like, why did I stop playing this game? I really like the combat. I like how stupid, goofy the pawns are and how they're helping me do battle. It kind of feels like a multiplayer game that you're playing by yourself. And I just really had a good time. Mind, I only played it maybe 2 days before I then bought Ni No Kuni. I really like it. Just getting back into that world. It's just so goofy. And I would rather Capcom do a Dragon's Dogma 2 than a Resident Evil 7 right now.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they've got plans for doing that, don't they? I mean, they talked about it.
I think the expansion comes out here in the spring or in the summer. I mean, I think it's a straight up expansion, not just DLC. So.
Not just it, yeah. Well, yeah, I feel like that's a game that, like, if you go into it with, because I went into it when we did that Reflex review, you know, the day that Mr. Dave himself was birthed in all his glory. And we just, like, kind of a negative attitude about it because, you know, that game had gotten, it was like, oh, you'll get to play the Resident Evil 6 demo, and that's awesome. And then, like, if you took it too seriously, then, and you had that kind of perception of the game, then you'd go in and you'd probably be disappointed. But, like, as soon as, like, that guitar, you know, heavy
theme
metal
song.
That theme song.
Oh, my God. I was like, okay, this is going to be hilarious and it'll be fun. And I almost feel like I give games that, like, are goofy a little bit more, you know, leeway, I guess, in terms of some of those mechanics. They can be kind of annoying because, I mean, just seeing Josh fight, what was he fighting, like a chimera or something like that at the very beginning, and just all these dudes just hanging off of it and this thing spinning circles and stuff like that. I was like, oh, that's absolutely hilarious. I wish I got that game.
And we ended that stream with like a 20-minute battle with a Cyclops that was just one of the most epic things I've witnessed. It has so much silly fun to it. Like, I don't... That game is just fun, and I don't know. It walks that line between being too self-serious and too kind of janky to take it seriously, but it. And I don't know if they intended for me to like it in the ways that I do, like if it was designed that way or just by accident. But yeah, I mean, the action in that game saves it so many times, and just the funny things that happen and. And just kind of, you have to come into that game with an open mind. I have a feeling like if we didn't know anything about it and just really wanted to be we were going to be critical of this new RPG, this new direction for Capcom, and you could pick it apart, but then you're kind of missing the point. And, this game, I really wish I still haven't bought it. I wish I had put a lot of time into this game because it, every time I see it played, I kind of get that urge, Aaron, that I want to go play this right now. And
that's exactly what happened. Maybe they'll get it ported to PC. I think there's a petition out there.
That'd be nice. Yeah,
and that would be crazy. I'll take mods and stuff in Dragon's Dogma.
Yeah.
But at least they're doing this DLC or this expansion, and then, you know, I also don't want them to rush another Dragon's Dogma 2. Like, there are things that they need to fix, like you said.
Yeah.
The travel and kind of the inventories in the shops, like, we got hung up a little bit, but, like, you forget about it the second you walk into a battle situation. So
best part, yes.
Yeah, that's cool. Anything else?
Real quick, I haven't been able to talk about Devil May Cry, the new one, just a little bit. Not a whole lot to say that hasn't probably already been said already, but okay. I've played maybe the first, and I have the third, and I played half of the fourth. But this one, I played it all the way through, and I enjoyed it. And I was kind of surprised. I mean, I I heard it's a little more accessible, and usually that seems to be kind of like a buzzword for bad. Oh, you know, grandma's going to sit down and play Devil May Cry now, and she's going to be great at it. And
she should.
She should be able to. But on the other hand, it made it more likable to me. I was able to focus on what I was doing and actually progress through the game rather than feel like, oh, I'm never getting the hang of this. Dante, I'm doing all the sword attacks. I'm too repetitive. This game just kind of made it more fluid for me. And if that's considered a bad thing, then I like a bad thing.
Devil May Cry never got in my way like other Devil May Cry games had. Like, some of the other games got so stuck in their ways of just really trying to nail down those combo systems, like, that they were inaccessible at a certain level. Like, I grinded through Devil May Cry 4, but there was never an instance where, like, I wanted to stop playing Devil May Cry, DMC, Devil May Cry, before I finished it. And
same way.
It was incredible. And I can't say enough about that game, actually. So,
yeah, I feel like Ninja Theory knocked it out of the park. I mean, my expectations weren't high for it. If people weren't talking about it, I probably wouldn't have bought it. But I decided, you know, why not? I'll give it a try. You know, if this one burns me, I might never touch Devil May Cry again. Yeah. I'm a liar.
Yeah.
But I played through it all the way. I'm probably going to play through it on a harder difficulty at some point. But it was a fun game. It's what I would have wanted it to be.
Yeah, it's fun. It's kind of what I play video games for. Like, just the rushes I got and just some of the ridiculous lines that it crossed, especially with some of its battles and some of the settings that you're in, and the variety of environments they throw at you, and the pacing is really well done. I kind of want to. I know Josh picked this up for PC, so I'm really curious to see how the PC version turned out, and if we can't convert Ethan into giving this game a shot as well, because I know he's got a lot vying for his time. But like, it's early, but this game kicked off 2013 in a hell of a surprising way for me. So
I agree.
I think it. I mean, it looks cool. I like the fact that they were able to, again, with all the kind of unnecessary hate that was kind of coming out in the beginning.
Yeah.
It's cool that they were able to do something good with it. So I think it's a game I'll pick up later on. But I mean, right? There's a lot vying for my time, and in terms of like an action game, like, I don't know if I'm quite in the mood for an action game right now. But every video I see of it, I'm like, I remember how much I loved Devil May Cry 1 and Devil May Cry 2, and if they've gotten rid of the difficulty that kind of, you know, went from there, then I think that's definitely something that would be appealing. Though that black hair, I tell you, that's really throwing me off.
It's really off-putting.
I literally think I've made that joke 3 times in the last 3 podcasts we've done, so that's the last time I do it.
I think you should do it every time, and even when we're not talking about Devil May Cry, just any dark-haired just character.
That black hair.
And what's this last thing on your list, Aaron?
Just real briefly, I started this game today. It's called Pixel People. It's on my iPhone, and I've already got a few games I like to play that want me to come back to them and touch the screen a little bit just to keep the game going. But I saw a good review about this one, so I'm like, I'll give it a try. And I was playing it all late morning, afternoon, even before we started this podcast. And it's from Chillingo? Yeah. And
Chillingo,
yeah. And it's just, it's pretty much, you start in this city, you're kind of building up a city of businesses and residential areas, but all the residents are clones, and so it's kind of dark in that way, that you're not just like recruiting people, hey, come live in my town, you are literally creating them from DNA, and you just kind of find, like, okay, so if I combine a teacher with another occupation, let's say like a policeman, this is not a real combination, you would get like a new occupation maybe. And it's kind of another Pokemon-esque thing where you need to find all the occupations possible in the game by combining previously unlocked occupations. And so it's got this kind of goal to it, other than I'm just going to, like, Tiny Tower, I like that game, I'm still playing it, but the goal there is kind of just, I'm just doing this because I don't know why. I still like the game, you know, no no hate against it, but this one I kind of feel like there's a concrete goal. I need to find all the occupations. I need to think, although you can just kind of brute force it and say, well, if I combine this with that, maybe it works. Oh, no, I'll try it again. And so it was free.
Okay.
Which, if more games cost a dollar, maybe I wouldn't waste all afternoon playing them. So I wouldn't have bought this, but I'm like, hey, it's free. I'll give it a try. If I hate it, I'll delete it. But you think hours it has, later.
You think it has some legs for you?
Yeah, it'll at least last me for a while, and I think maybe that's what I want out of an iPhone game. Sure. I have all these games that I feel like I could play forever until I get tired of them, but I have yet to really find many iPhone or iOS games
that have
an ending.
I noticed on my phone games, I'm usually only playing one, if I'm playing any. Like, I mean, I have my like kind of puzzle games or like social games that I'm playing with like friends and family. Like Words with Friends, that kind of thing, that's always ongoing. But if I'm playing a game, I'm only paying attention to one at a time, and I move on. So
I wish I could do that. I've got so many games on my phone, and I have to delete them to get new games that then I will play for a day and then forget about. But I hope to play this one longer. My wife downloaded it too, just because I threw the name out there. So if she likes it, that's a good sign. But I like it on its own merits, and it's worth a try. At least it's free.
It's free, yeah.
Yeah, hey, free is always good.
It just costs your time and maybe your sanity.
Yeah, that's okay.
We'll see.
I never had that to begin with, so
yeah.
Well, Ni No Kuni can just take sanity from someone else.
Yeah, that's what I've learned.
He's plenty sane. Give it to this guy.
Just give it to the other guy.
That's what the wizard book told me to do. So, Ethan Moses, what the hell have you been playing?
So I'm kind of going through these really weird, random groupings of games. So definitely bear with me. I think 2 weeks ago it was kind of strategy, kind of intense type games, and this week, kind of a hodgepodge. So first, I want to talk about Deadlight.
Yeah,
It is a zombie platformer that I absolutely just ran through. Downloaded it. The price was right. It was, I think, half off or 66% off on Steam. Got into it, and I'd read the reviews on it, and people were lukewarm about it, and so I didn't know what to think. Yeah. Obviously, you put zombies in anything, and I'm probably gonna check it out. But I think the big thing was, I guess the second part of the game, you're kind of in a sewer and you're kind of running through traps, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And so that's kind of what threw people off. But there was a lot with this game that was done right. I was really impressed with it. I actually, again, I don't sit down and play games all the way to completion in one sitting. Now, again, it was like a 4-hour game, so it's not like it was that much of a time commitment. But again, it was just, I don't know what it was, but it grabbed a hold of me. The controls, not great for the type of game it's supposed to be, but man, there was just, I don't know, there's just something about it. To be able to do that with a side scroller is pretty impressive. And I love this whole idea that your character is really somewhat fragile. I mean, you're not just running around shooting the zombies and whatnot. I mean, you're really trying to manipulate your environment and kind of avoid interacting with zombies altogether, and also you have these other kind of environmental hazards. And I mean, I just think there was a really good combination of that. Not to say that the game was perfect, because definitely it was lacking in some areas, but I was really pleasantly surprised. I really, really was. And I would recommend this game at the price I bought it for to people, just because it just, I don't know, man. I made a comment on Twitter, and somebody was like, yeah, it was, whatever. And I'm just like, I don't know what it was about it that I liked so much, but it had something, and again, I don't like full, I think maybe the thing is I don't like a full like puzzle platformer. I just don't want a platform. I want to have something else going on. And this game kind of gave me that. And if they would have just polished the control schemes up a little bit and just avoided the god awful second act of the game, it would have been, I think it would have done a whole lot better. Art style, wow, like really awesome. Like I'd like to see that again. Yeah, like I really good. Would.
And there's a couple scenes in it just that got, I got kind of pumped up for. I mean, it's obviously it's not, you know, The Walking Dead in terms of, you know, emotion, but I don't know, they went in a direction that I was kind of taken aback by. You know, it was kind of like there is a little bit more drama involved with it. You don't really get drama with side scrollers, you know what I mean? And there's one scene in particular that I won't spoil, but I said yeehaw. And I haven't said yeehaw for the longest time, but I got pretty excited about that. So, really cool game. I would really recommend it again. At the press point, I got it out. It felt good. So
what helped push you through the second act? Because I've heard like my sources have been that it starts off pretty amazing, and then it kind of trips all over itself. And then I don't know. Yeah. But it sounds like you might have even liked the ending, or like it. Kind of saved itself maybe by the end.
I wanted to know what got me through the second act, and just to give people an idea, so obviously you're avoiding zombies throughout this, and then the second act you meet up with some character who takes you through this maze full of all these traps, and basically I wanted to know what happened. Like, I guess I wasn't expecting anything really big, but you know, like in a lot of zombie games and movies as of late, there's some humans that aren't really very nice, and you kind of get pissed off about the kind of stuff they do. And so you kind of get the impression going up into the second act, you get this impression that, you know, something bad, like your main character is going to get revenge on these guys, or he's going to do something and it's going to rectify everything. And that's what got me through that, because it was not that those were bad levels. They just didn't make sense in terms of the context of the game. And I think that it really seemed like the team, like one part of the team started with the first act, and then that same part of the team did the last act, but then somebody came in the beginning and they were like, oh shit, like we're making a puzzle platforming game, but we don't have that many platform puzzles, and we need to like somehow, like, you know, integrate them into this system. And you know, again, but it wasn't horrible. I mean, I got through it. It was frustrating. And it sucks because that I know the exact moment where people probably got, you know, tripped up. And it's really disappointing with a game like that that does have a lot of potential. Because, I mean, if you see it through to conclusion, cool shit happens. I guess that's the best thing I can say to people, is if you give it a little bit more time, push through it, you'll see some neat things. At least I thought they were neat.
But you're not usually one that has that amount of patience, so I was kind of surprised to see you push through.
That was a weird thing about it. But see, that's my New Year's resolution, man. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like I've kind of told myself, like, you've got to get to the end of games, even when – and I'm learning this now, and this doesn't happen – it's like with a movie. Like, you know, a movie, you can push through a movie – if you know that, you know, it's going to all come together and it's going to wrap up well. But what with games, you put so much time into them, you don't always have that patience. You don't always want to do that. And I've told myself, just wait, just get through it, and it'll be worth it. It'll be worth your time. Sometimes, yes, that happens. Sometimes not so much. So in this game, definitely was worth it. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that it was worth it at the discount price point, but I think it originally was $15. I think it was part of, Xbox Live Summer Arcade.
Yeah.
Is it a $10 to $15 purchase though?
I think $10 at the most. Just because there were some technical. When you make a platform game, you're the controls have to be spot on. Like, I'm sorry, like in this day and age, there's really no excuse for not having that. And that was the only thing that, other than again the second act, there was some issues with controls. So I think that, and it wasn't very long either. I mean, it was 4 hours long, and that's after dying a whole lot. And so there was that artificial length too, because I mean, there's an extra hour of just kind of like trying to figure out what you did wrong, you know. So. I think $10. I think if they would have come in at a $10 price point, I think people may have given it more of a chance. But as soon as you see $15, which, you know, if you don't buy a whole lot of games, or maybe you buy one Xbox Live game, you know, a month or a summer, you're probably not going to use it on a game that everybody says you're going to not like after an hour. You know what I mean? Yeah. So $10 probably wouldn't have been a bad idea. So, but that was definitely cool.
Cool.
And then the other game that I've kind of been off and on with for a while is Don't Starve, which I got Man, I don't remember when I purchased that, but it was a while ago, and I kind of jumped into it, and I wasn't really in the state of mind that I wanted to do another kind of survival type game. And then as of late, it's just been charming the pants off me, and that's tough because I'm a fucking prude.
I like my pants. Oh yeah.
I love my pants. I love them when they're on, but man, there's just really something about the game. I think there's an aspect of it. There's a lot of randomness to it. So, you know, for instance, today I was playing and Don't Starve, for anybody who's not aware of it, is I don't even know. I would say it feels like Minecraft outside of the actual crafting and mining. But that it's that whole idea of getting ingredients for certain objects and then just kind of trying to survive in this world. And there's, you know, weird animals, and there's trees and plants and all this kind of fun stuff. But there's a randomness to it as well. And so, you know, I was just playing the other day, and they're adding these updates to it. And so I never read and I did this with Minecraft as well, is in Terraria to some extent, is I don't read all of the detail about, you know, kind of the updates. I kind of want to be surprised mm-hmm. with it. And so that's how I'm kind of doing it with this game. So I'm playing and suddenly I'm finding these footprints and I'm tracking these footprints around and I find this creature that I've never seen before. And I probably won't see for a long time since, you know, just kind of this random stuff popping up and just this whole idea of, you know, you can lose everything. Like you put a lot of time and effort into it and you could lose it all if you die. And, but not in a way, it's not a difficult, like, situation where you're going to be dying all the time. If you're smart, you plan well, you'll be okay. But I don't know. I've really liked and the art style itself is unbelievable. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, that was what got me into it. Like, you know, is it doing anything too different? Not necessarily. I mean, there's games like it, but that art style is just enough to keep you going just to see what the next weird little creature is going to be. And I love that you're not really focused on fighting stuff. I mean, you're I'm playing a lot of, you know, violence heavy, action heavy games. And, this game, you're kind of like, you gotta be careful. You know, you don't really stack up too well. I mean, when your best armor, the best armor I've gotten so far is a suit made of a log, you know, you don't really take too many chances.
Did you build Woodman on accident?
yeah, that's exactly what your character looks like eventually. But I like these type of games, and I love the fact that there's that randomness to it. You know, there's always gonna be something new, and if you just keep pushing to explore and keep looking around, you're gonna find some cool stuff, and it's not just action the whole time.
I've talked quite a bit about my video game paralysis when it comes to games like Minecraft and Terraria. The thing with Don't Starve that kept me playing is that I didn't know what I was getting into when I started playing the game. So I just started wandering around and figuring things out and mixing things together. And I think, like, maybe had I gotten in on the initial wave of Terraria or Minecraft, I might have enjoyed it more versus knowing what I had, like, the puzzle aspect of, like, figuring out how to use stuff or accidentally figuring out how to make more things. Was a lot of fun, and I feel like I missed that with those games, and I don't know if it was just, I don't know, the kind of Tim Burton-esque art style that I enjoy about this game, and the character, like the personality of the characters that comes from the design that made me give it a shot, and that it was free, and that I kind of really approached this game with an open mind and really enjoyed it, and now, like, you know, it's kind of seems to be like in that kind of perpetual beta phase that a lot of these games are. I don't know when to get back into it because I kind of want them to get it done to a certain point before I spend a lot more time because I feel like they might like reset all my progress or, you know, like I don't want to feel like I'm investing in for nothing because I know I would get hooked on the game. So that's really the only thing that's been keeping me away from it. And I also just think I never would have picked that this game came from Clay Entertainment if I hadn't seen it. So
I'm going to say they're quickly becoming one of my favorite kind of low to mid tier type, you know, indie developers. I mean, it's amazing that, you know, they did Mark of the Ninja, Shank, and this. I mean, those games, I mean, oh, wow, yeah. I mean, and this one is just such a departure, but probably good because, I mean, Mark of the Ninja kind of took some elements of Shank but made a completely different game out of them, and then you almost expect, okay, so now they have this side-scrolling, really, you know, fluid animation style down. We're going to expect that from the next game. And they were just like, nah, I don't think so. We're going to do something completely different. Really good idea. I mean, they're not going to get pigeonholed into those type of games. And again, this is a game that people will probably play for quite some time. Because, again, the difference between this and, like, a Minecraft or Terraria is that barrier of entry, I believe, is a little bit lower. I feel like it's a little bit lower because you don't step out into this gigantic world and you're just like, holy shit. It's a small little circle. And if you really want to just stay there, you could. You wouldn't have to do anything. You could just stay in that one place, but that would take the fun out of it. You got to go explore a little bit. But yeah, I mean, definitely, I think this is going to be this could be a gateway drug for people to get into Minecraft and stuff like that. So,
Aaron, have you played this at all?
Yeah, Ethan, I think, gifted me a copy. That's how I got it. So, if Steam's still doing that, you know, two for one, people should, you know, go in together, because that was what my plan was. Ethan surprised me, and over the, like, at the Christmas break I took, I finally decided to sit down and actually try to play it for real. And so I'm, like, at my in-laws' house, and they're doing stuff, and I'm like, well, I'm just going to open my computer, see what's going on, and next thing I know, I'm playing Don't Starve, and it's, like, an hour and a half later, and I'm like, I am being so antisocial right now, but this is the farthest I've made it in the game. I made a hat.
Yeah.
There's some dog monster things chasing me around. I'm just running forever. Why won't they stop? I killed this spider and it dropped some meat and I ate it and I died. And, well, time to close the laptop, I guess. But I had a lot of fun with it. So I haven't played it in a few weeks. And I'm sure it's been updated since then. But I'm kind of in that state of, do I want to get back into it and get surprised by new things? Or do I want to wait a little longer and have, like, a bigger wave of surprises hit me? But I'm just, you know, busy, Ni No Kuni and all this other stuff coming out that I feel like I can afford to wait.
Yeah,
but I really like the game and I want to get back into it.
I'm definitely keeping an eye on it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
What else, Ethan?
Last thing I want to talk about is Path of Exile, the beta. I know a lot of people are probably point and clicked out at this point. You know, we had, you know, Torchlight 2, and then we had Diablo 3 in 2012. And Path of Exile was a game that I followed, just looking at the progress, you know, the team behind it, Grinding Gear Games, really just spoke a lot about how they, you know, really enjoyed Diablo 2. They did not like the fact that, you know, some of these games had kind of been watered down a bit to kind of, you know, open themselves up to, like, a casual audience. You know, they weren't knocking some games. They were just kind of saying, look, we have an audience in mind and we're going to stick to that audience. And this game feels like they just sat back and watched, you know, the mistakes Diablo 3 made. Mm-hmm. Some people would call them mistakes, but Torchlight 2, you know, kind of the graphics of that and how some people kind of take issue. That's what they kind of, why they avoid that game is because it's too cartoony or whatnot. That's just some people's opinions. And they kind of looked at both those games and they said, okay, so people are having issues with the cartoony graphics. Take that out. We're going to present this dark, gritty ass world. Mm-hmm. People want customization. They want to be able to fail or make an incredible build. We're going to give them that. And they just made a really, really, really good action RPG. And the thing about it is it's free. It's a free-to-play game. This is probably one of the best examples of where I hope free-to-play models go, because the only thing that you really can buy right now in the microtransaction store is just kind of supplementary type items, animations, effects, pets, things that don't really influence a game outside of just some visual type flair. Other than that, you can play through the whole game without spending a dime. It's pretty incredible to the point, and I wrote a preview on this, that I'm hoping that they are able to maintain that, which I think they are. Josh will talk about the you know, the whale, his whale theory, in terms of, you know, you got one person that's going to be spending a lot of money and that kind of supports everybody else. And this game is, I mean, I hope it can, because it's great. It's a really well put together game. At this point right now, I'm working on two different builds. I've got, you know, a tank. You know, it's my caution tank when I'm playing any sort of RPG like this, where there's kind of a skill element to it. Or if you're going to be working with people and playing with, you know, other players on the online, I always go with the safety tank. So, you know, a tank is it's pretty easy to mold your tank. You know, it's tough to fuck that up. You can, but yeah. It's tough to fuck it up. So I went with that. And then my other guy, which I actually live stream today, is a dude that's just focused on punching things. So all of his moves revolve around punching and, you know, getting life on attack and that kind of stuff. So it says a lot about the game for me to be able to, I mean, much like in the way that Diablo 3 did it, in that you can play through the game and you're going to play through it again at a different difficulty level, and yet still there's something about it. Obviously, there's some loot lust to it, but for me, exploring this passive skill tree, and this is what Path of Exile is going to be defined by. They have this incredible passive skill tree, which is basically how you build your character, and then you also get skill gems that you can, you know, place into your weapons and whatnot. It's 1,350 different passive traits that you can, you know, adjust your character with. So, I mean, you could literally any sort of RPG build you want, you can make it in this game. It's insane to see this skill tree. And I mean, Justin, you just talked about kind of barrier of entry and looking at something and being like, holy shit, don't look at the passive skill tree and even think about like trying this game, because I mean, it is incredibly huge. Oh my god, it's gigantic. And I made sure in my article I put a picture of it on there, but I don't know, it makes your brain go crazy thinking about it, but it works really well. And I mean, it's a slower pace than Torchlight 2 and Diablo 3, which is good. I think that's okay. I think that at the end of the day, there are three different action RPGs for you out there, depending on what your tastes are. And that's not a bad thing at all. A lot of people want to say this is better than that, or that's better than this. I think I enjoy all those games for different reasons. This game definitely has that mature edge to it that I really enjoy in Diablo 2. And also, this is a game where you're really not a good guy. And I don't usually like games like that, but you're in exile. And you've done something to get sent to this island. And so you're kind of like either, you know, trying to redeem yourself or whatnot. But I mean, you're not a great character. And so it's just a lot of ugly, disgusting people fighting each other. So pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
No fixing of broken hearts or hanging out with
characters. Nothing of that.
No drippy.
Yeah, no drippy at all. There's some drippy shit, but it's not fun. No stuffed animals.
Ethan, I want you to watch some videos of Mr. Drippy so you can have some context, but now I'm having a lot of fun picturing like these really dark, gritty games where he just does or Mr. Drippy does a cameo, like in his exact art style, like it just happens. Your whimsy DLC for everything.
I was gonna say, this game is the opposite of whimsy, because I just looked up a picture of Mr. Drippy and I was like, oh my gosh, that's like the opposite of what this game is about. There's nothing cute about it. I almost feel bad if Mr. Drippy found his way into Rayclast, which is the continent of the damned, essentially is what it's called in this. So yeah, I don't know. That's a crossover that maybe someone will explore down the road. I don't know.
So, not to put you on the spot with this, but again, I'm more intrigued from the, okay, what mood do I have to be in to play Diablo 3 versus when do I play Torchlight 2 and now with Path of Exile? Like, as far as even just from the co-op aspect, like how do you, like, I want to go, you know, raid some dungeons with my bros. How do I know which game I want to go to? Like, what do you have any like gut reactions of, like, are there distinct differences between the three for you?
So to me, Torchlight 2 is something that I'm going to play with people I know. Okay. Just because there's a little bit, I feel like Torchlight 2, there's some depth to it in a completely different way than there is to Diablo 3 and Path of Exile. Okay. Diablo 3, to me, at this point, it's run its course with me just because I've played it so many times and I want that level of customization. So if you don't want to mess with all of that stuff, if you want to just go in there, collect loot and kill things, which is what Diablo is really good at, do it.
Yeah, so it's the most mindless of the three.
And I don't mean that in a negative way at all. Yeah. And so to me, the difference between Torchlight 2 and then Path of Exile is that that maturity. Like, if you want to feel not horrible about killing things, like if you want to kill cute animals and that kind of stuff and zombies that have smiles on their faces, Torchlight 2 has that. And I think I love the art style of Torchlight 2. Don't get me wrong, but sure. What's going to keep you in Path of Exile is the fact that it is gritty. It is more mature. You feel icky, but you also feel good about killing all these icky things. You know, you want to clear this continent of the damned and
clear the icky.
Yeah, clear the icky, the sticky icky. That's something completely different. It's a maturity level. It's a difference between Torchlight 2 and Path of Exile. Just it feels like more of an adult game. Not that Torchlight 2 wasn't. And again, I don't want to sound negative saying that. It's just that art style does put people off, and I have to be in a certain mood to play either one of those games.
I can only speak for Diablo 3 and Torchlight, but I mean, for everybody here, we love both those games. And then it sounds like Path to Exile, I mean, you're putting it right up there with it, and it's just, but yeah, I mean, I get they're so similar at their core, but you would be in three different mindsets to enjoy these games. I'm just kind of curious to know, okay, what will I have to be in to get the most out of Path of the X-Files.
But Path of X-Files sounds awesome.
I'd play that game.
versus Torchlight 2 and the others, so. That's cool. I was really curious about that. Ethan streamed this on Monday on our Twitch TV channel, and when I first kind of glanced at it, like, it's funny just how much it looks like enhanced Diablo 2. Like, it literally it looked more Diablo than Diablo 3 did. So
yeah.
That kind of caught me off guard. So that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. As far as the games that I've been playing, where the hell to start? I've been a little bit all over the place. Let's go with my highlight of the past few weeks was when the Hyrule Historia book showed up on my doorstep. One, because I forgot that I pre-ordered the thing. So there's nothing like that Amazon order of just you get notified. Like, I have it set up so I get texted when something is shipped to. And I was like, your order is shipped. I was like, uh-oh, somebody's been using my credit card. Oh, it was me. Oh, I bought this thing ahead of time. So I didn't even have time to be mad that I missed out on pre-ordering this book. So anyway, this is like the all-encompassing Nintendo-endorsed book of everything Legend of Zelda. It is a beautiful piece of work for any Zelda fan, and it has the feature they all keep talking about is it actually has the loose timeline of how all the Zelda games go together. And so I just was reading this that first night I got it, scrolling through the artwork, which is amazing, just, you know, having flashbacks to all the games that I had played, and then really focusing on all the games I hadn't played, a majority of which are the mobile versions. And so I had my 3DS handy because I was actually trying to download Fire Emblem, which I'll get to in a little bit. And
I did listen.
And I started playing Link's Awakening DX, which is basically like the Game Boy Color version of the first Game Boy Legend of Zelda. And then looking back through, this is the fourth Legend of Zelda game that was made, and it was made after A Link to the Past, and a lot of the art style and gameplay is kind of similar to A Link to the Past, which, you know, that's one of the games that people talk about as the best in the series, depending on when you came into the series. And so, this is, when you read about this is the original Game Boy version of a Legend of Zelda game, my bar wasn't very high, but this game is fantastic.
Of my favorite ones.
Yeah.
It's good.
So I didn't know what to expect. And when it started looking like A Link to the Past, I was like, yeah, I'm going to stick with this one. So, I played a couple hours of it, got through two dungeons. The like random Nintendo cameos and references caught me off guard. Cause there's definitely, there's a raccoon in the mysterious wood. the Mysterious Forest or something. It wasn't the Lost Woods, which caught me off guard. Because I was, at this point, after reading Hyrule Historia, trying to find all the continuity issues. But anyway, so there's this raccoon that you give some powder to, and he basically becomes Mario. So it was Mario in a raccoon suit.
Yeah.
And then there's also a mention of if you can find someone a Yoshi egg. And then there are a few dungeons or, like, subterranean areas that they go to the straight 2D side-scroller view on, which, rather than the isometric or the overhead view of the rest of the Zelda map, but, like, and there were some fucking Goombas in the sewers. And I was like, am I, and I was, one of my buddies was next to me. I was like, am I playing a Mario game? Because this is just, like, it's a little too weird when I'm coming from reading, you know, sure, they've retconned all the hell out of that timeline, but just, like, when you go back in Nintendo's history and realize how close some of these games were, and I was like, if they had really continued to do this and loop in the worlds of Mario with a bunch of other games, that really could have fucked them up in long term. So it was kind of interesting nods, but it really, that's what stood out for my gameplay experience, was like, they're trying to get more Mario into this, and they had no idea how good Zelda was on its own at this point. Like, they kind of didn't trust it. And so that was kind of interesting
to
see.
It's funny to hear you saying that, just because, like, I played that game so long ago, so I was younger, and before, like, you get older and get more obsessive about, like, what you do and your hobbies, like, that never crossed my mind. I'm like, hey, it's a Goomba. Hey, that guy turned into Mario. It's cool to you. But as an adult, you're like, what are they doing? Stop it, Nintendo.
So that was also, I went back and started, I was listening to all the, you know, Zelda orchestra music at work, and I was just completely absorbed in Legend of Zelda for 3 or 4 days last week, and it was kind of nice because I kind of got there. I mean, yeah, the book got me in the mood for it, but I also came to it naturally versus when a Zelda release comes out these days, you kind of have to be like, okay, I'm going to get into Zelda mode to enjoy it, but like, that had kind of come up more naturally. I was more excited to play Zelda games just because, you know, Zelda games are what they are, and I love them to death, but sometimes I'm not in the mood for them. But to be put in that mood, it was very, very nostalgic, more so than a lot of my Nintendo experiences lately. And the fact that I'm still, like, actively playing a Game Boy game right now. Usually, when I go back and play a retro game like that, I'll do it for, like, one session and won't touch it again. But I've had two or three different extended sessions with this game, and hope I see it through. So that one definitely holds up. The other big game of my weekend. So this was for the last couple of weeks, I've been kind of in between games. Ever since I finished Devil May Cry, I haven't wanted to get started in something big, which is why I shied away from Ni No Kuni after I discovered, yeah, I like this game and I'm glad I purchased it. And it was interesting to download a game on PSN. That was really the experience I was after. I didn't know what to play, and then Need for Speed Most Wanted showed up on my console once again, and I put like 3 hours in the game, and like, multiplayer is easily the best aspect of that game, but I have such fond memories of Burnout Paradise and just driving around and playing single player that I lost so much time to this game, just driving around in between events and trying to see how long I could get chased by the cops and then eventually evade them. And the,
that feels good.
Oh man, it's this game. I don't know. It was perfect. It was the exact game I wanted to play right then. I just had no idea. Like, when you're like, what genre do I want to play? Going through my queue, do I want to start something else up and know I'm never going to go back to it? And then I always abandon racing games like way too quickly. And so I'm probably like only about 50% complete and Most Wanted. But if it's fallen off your radar at all, I mean, it's the go-to racing game that you should be playing. And like, I'm still getting just little thrills about unlocking cars and getting much more into, you know, every race gives you things to tweak out each car. And so I'm revisiting cars I've been using and trying to max them out and trying to, I mean, do the really the really stupid open world shit that should drive people insane. But I'm trying to get all of the like speed records of all all 60 or 90 or 120 or what it is, like, what are they called? The speed detectors. The
cameras.
Yeah, the speed cameras that, like, yeah, they just take a snapshot when you fly by them, and it shows you your leaderboard of your friends and how fast you were going at that intersection or whatever. And I'm trying to get to the top of as many of those as I can. Because that's when I don't, like, I want to play video games, but I don't want to think about them. It's just the perfect thing to do. So that game and a lot of Criterion games, I just have the biggest shit-eating grin on my face while I'm playing these. Just I can't describe it any other way. It's just fun to play, and I was it was exactly what I was looking for, and I'm glad that I remembered I had that game.
Yeah, I've got it too, and I need to play more of it, but it's just a good game.
Yeah. Have you played did you play any multiplayer on it?
I have not done that yet, and everyone suggests it. I mean, you just did right now, but I have not tried it. I haven't tried that multiplayer yet, but I've watched a video. I've seen some footage of it, and it just looks like it's something to, at least to try once, just because it's different from just your team deathmatch. It kind of does invoke that Burnout Paradise feeling again of you're a bunch of dudes in cars, and you're all just amped on doing as many events as you can, and the fact that you have to race to that event.
Yeah, the chaos.
Like, yeah, the chaos of everyone just colliding into each other. Like, we need to get to this thing, and we need to do something different now.
And that they've made griefing fun in that game, and you know, I hope they get to do another Burnout. I hope they get to, like, completely break their barriers off, because I know they're a little bit restricted by what they can do with these licensed cars. Yeah. But I still get to wreck the way that I want, and just kind of laugh at myself for being so dumb to think that I could pull that move off. And then one time out of 10, when I do pull the move off, and like, I mean, that game is like the epitome of so many races. I will, like, whenever I just barely win, I'll drop the controller and both my arms will go up in the air, and just
yeah, the reactions just to winning a race barely, just narrowly avoiding getting T-boned by a cop. There are so many, like, you get amped inside, and there's so much stuff that can come flying out of your mouth in those yeah, moments. I mean, whether it'd be like a shit-eating, you know, smack talk, or just yeah, a sigh of I can't believe yeah, I pulled that off.
And I almost forgot about this. Aaron, we haven't been able to talk about The Cave.
Yeah, we haven't talked about The Cave. I reviewed The Cave. I played through The Cave, and I have not talked.
I'm two-thirds of the way through The Cave. I've played two of the character-based puzzles. There hasn't been a game that I've wanted to love more than The Cave that won't let me love it.
That's when I had to sit down and review The Cave. Before I even played it, I'm like, I hope this is a game that just blows me away with how it is and what it's doing. And I got maybe halfway through it, and I'm like, this review for The Cave is going to be pretty much what you said. I want to love it, but there's just stuff happening in here where my excitement level is not where I wish it was.
And I don't want to say it, but it makes me worry about Double Fine Adventure.
I didn't think about that.
Let me get to it. So this is Double Fine and Ron Gilbert's latest. The thing I love about it is that it's basically a 2D platformer adventure game, like classic point-and-click adventure game. And it's got a lot of obviously got a lot of character and personality, great writing, really humorous, yeah, really quirky. I love the fact that the cave itself is your narrator, and he's snarky in a totally different way than, like, GLaDOS, but it works. So the initial setup is fantastic. I love the fact that I think there are 7 different characters in the game, and you have to choose 3 to go into the cave, and you solve different puzzles. And each there are, like, set puzzles that are always there. I think there are 5 or 6 puzzles total.
There's about that many.
Okay, there's a tutorial one. I think there's an opening one. And then you get it randomly chooses a character. Then you get another one. So that's kind of how
Shy of 10 puzzles.
And so there are very character specific ones, which are easily the highlight. They're very well written. And you kind of discover, like, that maybe these characters aren't, like, heroes. They're not necessarily all that likable. They're kind of flawed people. So that whole aspect of it's really, really cool, and I think that they are onto something with this game. Like I said,
definitely
a side scrolling 2D platforming adventure game. It should work, and these are guys that are experienced making adventure games, but they didn't. I don't know how in playtesting, no matter how beautifully designed this game is and how the map connects so well with itself, the backtracking in this game and then the inventory of this game completely hold it back and make it just a fucking chore to play.
The strongest words, but also the truest.
It's because it could be great if they had solved that, and I feel like, and I refuse to say that is just like that they can get by with that being almost a nostalgic thing or a challenge or just, you know, a feature of adventure games, that there's going to be backtracking involved. But the fact that, like, the thing is, you're always controlling three characters and you switch between them by, you know, kind of hitting your directional pad or whatever. Yeah. And it does a good job when you find, like, checkpoints in the different puzzles of warping your other characters to you when you've gotten really far ahead of them. But there are just too many times where you have to, like, go just far enough away that you have to move all three characters or do something three times that I've already mentally, I've solved the puzzle. I have figured out what, I've connected A to B, and I know what I have to do. But executing it is going to take me an additional 6 minutes.
It's the worst interactive case of show your work that I've had to go through so far. I feel like maybe I played it with two other people, because you can play it co-op. I believe you can play it co-op, but I mean, still, in that case, I mean, you still have, someone might figure it out, and you have to let everyone else know, okay, here's the solution, let's all do this. And it still kind of feels like it shouldn't be that way.
You would have to have like a 50-foot overview of the map and like literally tell people where to go after you have solved it in your brain to speed it up. I think even playing co-op, that you would find yourself with everybody's in the same area. Somebody has to go to a far corner, and yet I still think it would fall apart on itself. And so, like I said, I'm 2/3 of the way through it. The other problem is I can get through the backtracking because like I said, I enjoy the stories and everything, and this, and just getting through a game is not that long, but like just the payoffs aren't there either. It's as far as it, like I'm done with the puzzle before I finish it, and it's just, it's really, really close, and I want them to try again.
I want adventure game. Those are all three things you have to get perfect, because the big difference, especially with side scrollers, is if you don't have enemies or a lot of, you know, platforming type things to distract you from those puzzles, what do you have as filler? What do you have in between? And everything that I've read is it's kind of like, man, it's you know, like nothing to distract you. That's disappointing.
Yeah, it's close, and I want, whether they do it or not, I want somebody else to try more of these 2D platforming adventure games. I think I could really enjoy it. I didn't really talk about it, but the inventory system, at first I thought it was brilliant because each character can carry one item and you always see what they're carrying. And I thought, oh, this could be designed really well, but it doesn't do a good job. And I think there's some achievements related to this, as far as you can carry certain items with you throughout the entire, through the entire cave.
Yeah, probably.
But you don't normally, whatever items you need to use to solve the puzzle that's right in front of you, you have them really close by, and I never knew when I could like let go of things, and I could only ever have three, and most of them did nothing for me. And so that aspect became kind of frustrating. And then the two puzzles I got stuck on, one of them I never would have solved if I hadn't looked it up. Just the way it works almost seems like a glitch, because I tried to do it and it didn't work. So I moved on and tried to find another solution. And, you know, but I kind of, it's give and take with that, with adventure games. There's always, you're always going to hit your wall. But, I was kind of frustrated by, I thought a lot of this stuff could have been solved in playtesting, and I just don't know why especially the backtracking and the fact that it's not fun to move around. It's not fun to do the platforming. The jumping's floaty, especially navigating ladders is just annoying as hell. It's so slow when you climb and you can fall to your death, and it just it's like has too many animation frames that it's just not tight enough, and oh man, it's
really weird. Like, there's two things you can climb. There's ladders and ropes, and I found you can jump faster up a ladder by just mashing the A button, but there's no helping you on a rope. You're just going to got to go that distance. And if you know what you need to do, it just all comes back to, if you figured it out, you're still spending all that time executing it. And maybe it won't even work. Something could go wrong. And then you're like, oh, I thought I had it figured out. And I mean, that's just the nature, I guess, of adventure game puzzles. But you spend a lot of time just backtracking, milling around, hoping something inspires you to find that solution. And there's no death. I kind of, you know, there's just no death. Like, the replacement for death is your insane boredom and mind raking for, well, how do I get out of this puzzle? And, like, I avoided looking them up.
There's no tension, and there's no, like, climax or, like, satisfaction. It's just, you finish it. You don't get any enjoyment out of it, and I mean, the only enjoyment I got is just the chuckles I get from the narration in between things, and one of the characters I used was the twins, and I like little evil children. Yes, so that,
I liked that.
That was fun. But
hated their puzzle at one point, but
it was the time traveler that her puzzle.
Holy
almost broke
shit!
It was really cool.
The way it's set up is great.
Yeah.
But then you have to do it. And there's so much thinking. It's like they want there to be two people in the room with you so you can all keep track of what's going on. When I first figured out what was happening, I'm like, time travel puzzle is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And I got to a certain point, and I'm like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah, that was the one that there's no way I would have figured it out, because I tried to do it the way that it gets solved, and yeah, it didn't behave that way. So
I'm curious. We might have to talk off podcast about where you got stuck, because I did it without looking it up, and I'm curious what messed up for you.
You're a better adventure game player than me.
I just wanted to finish that game.
So really play the demo, because I think you'll get the personality hit that you need from a Double Fine game out of that, and then I don't really think the rest of it's worth the time to, like I said, there's no payoff, so it's maybe watch the YouTube videos.
Watch someone else play.
Yeah
I was gonna say, I'm convinced not to do anything with it at all. Maybe look at it.
The surprising game that showed up in my playlist thanks to Co-op Gaming is Iron Brigade. Ethan's been playing this a bit online as well. I never gave Trenched a fair shake, just because of my video game paralysis of that also happens in strategy games, especially anything related to tower defense. And even though that's kind of a lighter aspect of Iron Brigade, like, you can pretty much play it as an action game, I have now found that in any of these types of games, I need to play it with friends to just push me past that point where I overthink it. Like, you have to let yourself mess up, you have to let yourself die, you have to, like, I mean, when I first started playing Trenched, I didn't want my base to ever take damage. Like, so I would restart assuming, well, I must have set up my turrets wrong because the enemy got through. No, it's okay, you don't have to get a gold medal the first and only time you run through these levels. So I'm really glad that I played it with some friends and let go and started having fun with it, because the customization options and then just goofing off on the ship with your buddies, it's surprisingly social. It's a lot of fun, and in the end, you're just blowing up a bunch of TVs, and it's a good distraction. And this game still has some legs because a lot of us have been playing it. So why'd you start playing it again, Ethan?
I was in the mood to play like a tower defense game, but I wanted to play a mech game. And I don't want to play like a Mech Warrior or like a Hawken. I wanted to play something that was a little bit maybe more a little bit simpler. And I remember how much I love that game, and I was like, I want to play the DLC because I never got the DLC on the Xbox 360. And as soon as I got into it, I mean, because that was one of the fastest turnovers on a review I've ever done, the fastest. And as soon as I started playing it, I remembered why. It's just how the game is just all comes together. I mean, you've got your towers, you've got your action, you've got all these different guns you can load up. And even when you lose a level, you've earned some weapons and you can kind of re-equip yourself and go back into it. And I never played it co-op. Mm-hmm. And so when Josh and I played it co-op, that just it struck me, and I was like, okay, now not only do I want to play this game because it's fun, but I also want to get the best equipment I can, so when I play co-op the next time, I am just fully maxed out on all that I can be maxed out on, and that would make me hopefully a good teammate for whoever wanted to play with me. So, just such a great man. That's a good game. I want to see more out of that. I want them to make a sequel to that game so bad, or more DLC, or open up the Steam Workshop. I don't know what it would take, but I want more from that.
I think it's I'm happy that we're getting so many games from Double Fine these days, but I think it's the one their standout game out of, like, since Brutal Legend, when they kind of switched up their focus. I think Iron Brigade is, and it, that wouldn't be the one I'd pick either. Like, as far as just looking through, like, if you just listed off the premises and showed me a screenshot of the style of the game and said Double Fine made it, this would be like the last one I would pick as far as the one that's most fun to play, or the one that would have the, you know, the most legs to it. And that's not a mech joke, but but it's such a solid game, and so much, like, I forgot that I thought it was co-op, just two player, but I forgot that it's four player. And I'm really glad I'm finally giving it some time, and I hope to shoot some Martian bears as well. So just some quick hits, just so I can kind of mark them off my list. Part of my Steam sale over the holidays was I bought a bunch of Lego games, and I played through the opening of Lego Batman 2 and Lego Lord of the Rings, and still really like these Lego games, even though they're all the same games. But each, the fact that these games now incorporate dialogue, especially, you know, the Lego Batman stuff had, like, they'll have comic book writing for it, but the fact that Lego Lord of the Rings uses dialogue from the movies with the Lego minifigs, like, just being a little bit silly, and it really works, and it shouldn't be as funny as it is to me. And I can't wait to I'm hoping to play these games with Lily and kind of introduce her to these games are really easy to run around in. So that's kind of why I was checking them out, to see which one we'll play first, and see if one of these games could top Lego Star Wars in that regard, because that one's pretty easy to pick up and play as well. But I had heard that the quality level diminished a little bit, like, for some reason with the Lord of the Rings games, but the opening really, really got me. So I was they seem to be as Lego-y as they've ever been. So.
Yeah, I picked up both of those, Lego Batman 2 and Lego Lord of the Rings, and I haven't tried out Lord of the Rings, but I really want to. I got them both on PC for fairly cheap, but as kind of easy as they are to play, that's kind of what the appeal seems to be in them, in that if you're in that mood, you don't want to do something like extremely vexing, you just want to have a good time, play a video game. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of fun. I kind of fell off of playing Lego Batman 2, but I had a lot of fun playing it. I could just sit there and just solve the puzzles and just beat some goons with a talking Lego Batman. And I mean, like, what, you know, what's better than that?
It worked. I mean, there's a little bit of a grind to it, but also the completionist in me just likes running around with basically no pressure to just beat these levels and beat things senseless and kind of laugh at how kind of silly and awkward the game can be, as far as just what the limitations of the minifigs are. And I'm surprised the formula just continues to work, because it isn't any different than playing any of the other Lego games. But It's still fun, and I'm glad that they keep pumping these out. And I feel bad for saying that, but I just there's no guilt here for that either.
There's no harm in more Lego games.
Josh and I kind of went through our War Thunder stories, but I've still been playing. That's the free to play game I keep going back to. But I won't really bore you guys with that. But just again, free to play has kind of turned the corner a bit, and I am not one to play a flight game. And there's just enough arcadiness to this World War II fighter plane game that it's fun right out of the gate, and the physics are just there enough that pulling off ridiculous maneuvers and crashing in fantastic fashion is always fun. So I recommend checking out War Thunder. Also real quick, I was kind of waiting for Fire Emblem to show up on the 3DS shop and got that to download last night. That was the first full game I've downloaded from the eShop, and other than not really knowing when the game was supposed to go live, that was a little bit confusing. I thought it was supposed to go live on Sunday, and I guess they've had a delay with shipping the actual cartridge version of the game. But it did go live like after midnight Eastern on Sunday night. So that store experience was relatively painless. So happy to report that, and I'm sure I'll talk about the game going forward. But the last game I want to talk about is the 2D platformer of last week called No Time to Explain. I've been trying to avoid all the puns related to this game because all the coverage for this game has been shit. The setup for the game is what's so awesome. Basically, you from the future busts into your house and takes off half of your house and says, I'm you from the future. I have no time to explain. And then a giant space alien crab grabs future you and runs off, and you have to chase him down with this giant laser that you from the future dropped. And all of the action in the game, it's puzzle platforming, plus you have a giant laser because you can use the giant laser for weaponry and also just kind of as a propulsion system to throw yourself around the level to make long jumps and hover. And it's cool in premise, and like I said, the constant time traveling thing, that every level's really short. You get to the end of it and you go through a little warp zone and start over, and you're always trailing your future self that is just being eaten alive by this crab and he's just screaming the entire time. So it's really silly and funny in that fashion. But I couldn't get a hold of the controls, and granted, going through our live streaming history, maybe I'm not as good at platforming games as I like to think I am, but I became more frustrated by the fact that who would have thought this giant powerful laser that can propel you off the ground is really hard to control, but some of the precision after four or five levels became a little bit too much. But I was at least curious enough from – I watched a trailer of it and read a few reviews that this seemed to be the kind of indie thing to play that week, so I gave it a shot. And while I was laughing the entire time, five or six levels in, I started getting pretty frustrated with the core mechanic, and it looks like it has some promise, but I recommend at least checking out the trailer and laughing at it's nonsense, but that's fun too.
Yeah, the trailer looked good. The gameplay scared the hell out of me. It looked pretty complicated, so I'm glad that you kind of made my decision for me.
But man, that giant space crab, and in future you screams pretty well and says some funny shit when you have to keep repeating levels over and over again. So I think it's going to do it for game talk tonight. Before we get out of here, horriblenight.com updates, kind of just ongoing maintenance to kick off this year. We had a new design go live on the site about a week ago. And then recently we did some more fiddling behind the scenes, and the site should be much, much faster and much more responsive. We kind of were fed up with our old web host and finally packed up our bags and moved to something a lot more suited for how our site has grown. So we hope you enjoy a much better browsing experience on the site. Like I said, it's the design's much more friendly for mobile devices, and it's finally responsive. When you click a link to open up a page, it's going to open up about the same speed as every other site on the internet. So rather than waiting 30 seconds. So we appreciate your patience if that's been an issue in recent months, but that issue should be fixed. So we hope you enjoy the new horriblenight.com. Upcoming, Ethan has kind of taken to doing weekly live streams on Mondays or Wednesdays or both. So be on the lookout for him in the mornings, Eastern Standard Time. And if you're around Germany, I think he's streaming mid-afternoon. So Therius Games, random members of Horrible Night will jump in and co-op with him. And he's always looking for bros from the community and chat to jump into his games as well. So we'll try to keep you updated on his game selection. But we've played Iron Brigade and Path of Exile recently, and we'll see in the Secret World, and we'll see what he's got in store coming up. So that's in addition to, while we weren't able to do a Tuesday night live stream this week, we will be doing those on a weekly basis, and we're also looking at kind of doing giveaways for some contests related to at least our live podcasts coming up. So looking to get a little bit more active in chat and encourage people to come check us out live. So for those of you listening, help spread the word and get people to check us out on twitch.tv/horriblenight or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. We appreciate the support. All right, we've bid Ethan adieu for the evening, but Aaron and I are going to take this show home with our threesomes of the week, our off-topic discussion. What else besides video games has had your attention, Aaron?
A lot of stuff going on lately. For one thing, I'm a big fan of NBC Thursday nights.
Yeah.
My wife and I like to watch those comedy shows. We're hooked on shows like 30 Rock, The Office, and Community's, you know. But 30 Rock ended this last week's Thursday, and so that I killed one of our slots for watching TV, and it was a really good comedy. It had its ups and downs at points, but I grew to love those characters. It was nice to have a show from people that I grew to like on SNL and continued to be funny. I mean, SNL is you can argue about whether or not that's funny sure. Nowadays, but 30 Rock has been really good to me. I really liked the show. I bought like the first season on DVD back when that was the thing I was doing, but I'll miss the show. It wasn't a comedy that had me, you know, hurting in the feelings department when it was over, but in the back of my mind, I was knowing these characters are ending now, and I grew to like them. They provide a lot of quotes, a lot of funny, snappy dialogue, and it's just kind of sad that, you know, good things have to come to an end, but if they go on forever, they suck, so.
Yeah, they, you know, I think their time had come, but it's definitely one of my favorite shows recently as well. I hadn't really kept up on it this season just because I cut cable and I cut cable and also forgot. Like, I realized this during the Indianapolis, the Colts-based episode for Parks and Rec. I have an antenna and I could be watching these live, but I'm so used to waiting on Hulu, and 30 Rock was not on Hulu through, unless you're watching it on the website, so that I just never went back. But anyway, I did make a point of checking out the finale, and I thought it was, as far as finales go, I mean, that set your bar accordingly. Like,
yeah,
I thought they handled it well, and I think they would be sad to see it go, but they, you know, they did the show well, and I think it was about the right time. I always wish that show had gotten you know, more attention or more ratings and better support and that kind of stuff, but it never really, you know, sold itself out to try to do something different. Like, the show always had a lot of integrity. I'm a big Tina Fey fan, so, they did well.
they did it well. I mean, some finales seem to go in a certain direction where things are just kind of really sappy. Like, everyone's sad. It's like it's written. Like, this show is ending and we're so upset that we're not doing this anymore. But the show really ended in a way that still felt like just a normal, it could have been a season finale of 30 Rock. And that's what I liked about it. It wasn't
It's just like sappy. Like the ones where they kind of pretend like characters' lives are ending. It wasn't that type of thing. And they hit enough of the like inside jokes and just like the smallish characters that I enjoyed. Like I over the years became a big fan of like anytime they make fun of Lutz and just the fact that that got centered around their final meal and overdid the Blimpies stuff. That was fun. So good on them.
The Vine app. So Twitter bought this service called Vine that kind of does a looping video, social media kind of thing. So it's up there with like Instagram where you take pictures and put filters. In this case, you make weirdly cut videos that loop indefinitely. And I'd heard about it, kind of brushed it off, but then one day decided, hey, I'll try it out. Made a video of my dogs running in the snow and threw it up on Facebook, Twitter, everywhere else. And people have always said, hey, Aaron, you've got beautiful dogs. I've got two huskies that are sisters. And my wife finally sees it. I'm waiting for her. She's like the one I'm trying to impress. I'm like, she'll be the one that can tell me if this video of our dogs is great. And so I don't want to bring it up. I want her to find it naturally. She's going to get on Facebook. She gets on Facebook and she's like, hey, what is this? And then she watches it and like it loops. And it's a really short video. There may be about 10 seconds maximum. And so she sits there and watches it like 20 times with me over her shoulder. And then eventually just starts laughing. She's like, the more I watch this, the more I enjoy it.
That's interesting.
And so and there's a lot of people kind of doing it and using it to do advertisements. Celebrities are kind of running away with Vine now, kind of amping it up, getting people interested. And so I can see some use out of it. The only issue I might have with it is just because it loops indefinitely, I can think of all the cool things I would do with it. But you need time to set all this stuff up. And so that means that you've taken your phone out and you just kind of hold on the screen. You press and hold. And that's recording, and you let go, and it stops. But if you want to set the next thing up, your phone is now, your phone or tablet or whatever, is now occupied by this app that wants you to start recording something else. And so I'm like, I don't want to mess up and, you know, switch to another app.
Lots of pressure.
Like, yeah, it's a lot of pressure. I'm like, I need to move on to the next thing. I wanted to make a Ni No Kuni video about the fact that Oliver has a useless jump if you turn in enough, you know, of the side missions. You can make him jump. And I'm like, I should make a looping video of him jumping. Hard to do by yourself with two hands.
That's the limitation if Vine came with a third hand, maybe.
Yeah, if you had more arms, in which to make looping videos.
I've been curious about it. Being on Droid, I don't think they've released the app for that yet. But it's been fun. I mean, it's been the buzzworthy thing to kind of pay attention to. The infinite loop stuff could be cool, but just, I mean, even just as, like you said, six second videos and a quick way to post and share those and not cluttering up YouTube pages, I think that's fine. It's a nice little thing for Twitter. Makes sense for them. I would definitely play with it whenever I switch back. I think I've made the decision to switch back as soon as I'm done with this phone, so...
Yeah, it's a nice little quirky app, and I mean, it does what it needs to do. And social media is all about quick attention and on to the next thing. And that's why the human race is doomed, I guess. And my final thing is JackThreads. It's an online shopping network for men. And so you kind of just – you can buy clothing outfits, kind of the latest trends and kind of things. And I had heard of it, got an account for it, and I was like, why do I want to buy – you know, outfits that are on apparently great discount from this this website that I'm just now hearing of. And I had a coworker, and he's like, oh, I bought some boots there. I go to JackThreads all the time. So I finally bought myself the hoodie I'm wearing right now. And it's very lightweight. It's comfortable. It's soft. And I'm like, I kind of like this. And then I wanted some fingerless gloves, and they had some were well made and
hoodies and fingerless gloves. I'm paying attention.
And so,
I don't know about this guy on their homepage, though.
Yeah, I don't know about
like
that.
Looks like Tom Cruise and Trent Reznor had a really angsty, preppy kid.
Yeah, they market themselves as like real, I don't know.
Real fashion for guys.
Yeah, real fashion hipsters.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of off-putting in that way, but the stuff seems to be of great quality. Nothing's broken or been really shoddy when it showed up, and the prices have been kind of, you know, very reasonable. And so I might use them more often, but I've done two purchases with them so far, and I like it, and I would recommend it to any guy out there that is willing to try buying his clothing from a store that does not exist.
I don't have a go-to online fashion site other than I do my Geek T-Shirts a Day sites. I got a few of those I check out, but beyond that, it's just, what's Target have? Because that's close. So
yeah, I mean, I would just go to Kohl's or something, yeah. And occasionally there would be like a Woot shirt that I'm like, I gotta have this because there's a joke on there that I get. Maybe no one else will, but yeah, Jack Threat's pretty good stuff if you've got friends that want to look at you in clothing you've never worn before and there's no joke to explain.
My threesome's kicking it off with my ongoing quest to like Timothy Oliphant. I tried, and I think I spoke about this on a previous threesomes, but I tried and failed to like Justified a few years ago. But now I've gotten really heavy into it, and then Josh made the suggestion that I try out Deadwood, which I'd also never – I tried and failed to watch. And so Deadwood is old-timey West, like Gold Rush era. Like they are trying to buy money from the Indians, and it's just a Wild West town that has not been annexed yet, and it's, you know, it's pretty brutal. And he's a retired U.S. Marshal, which is really funny because he's a U.S. Marshal and
Marshal in Justified.
Yeah, and the show has only got like three or four seasons, Deadwood, but it's really great. Lots of violence, lots of cursing, lots of bad characters, and great drama. So really liking it that. But I'm like going back and forth. Like I'll watch a Deadwood episode and I'll watch a Justified episode, and man, Justified's a little bit of a slow burn that first season, but like by the end of that first season, and then I'm halfway through the second season and really enjoying like the new villains of the second season, and that show is fantastic. And there's something simple about both these shows. I'm getting really into like, I don't know, either like really, you know, wittily written shows or really like high production value, high special effects. But this is, you know, it's an Old West cowboy type show, and then U.S. Marshal in the hills of Kentucky, like dealing with rednecks. Like there's no special effects behind this. It's just, you know, it's all about the characters, and it's
the rednecks are CG.
And it's really good. So maybe I'll try out the Hitman movie next. No, actually, I don't know where I go from here, but I've got enough seasons of these shows left, and Justified's I think just came back for its fifth season, I think. So
I've been meaning to watch Justified. Haven't seen a single episode.
Highly recommend it. Deadwood was an HBO show, so kind of know what you're getting into there, but it's super gritty, and I think it was like started in 2005, so it's got a few years on it, but holds up just fine.
Good to hear.
Yeah, so those are pretty cool. My latest Kickstarter, I think this is either the third or fourth Kickstarter I've backed, but just came across this today. I know it's always a good sign when you first find out about a Kickstarter and it's only been open for a couple days and they've already funded it. But I put a link in here for the Space Invaders chess set that is just made out of some wicked acrylic plastic badassery. And so I went ahead and back that one pretty quick. So this is the first Kickstarter I've backed that isn't just a pure video game, but I really dug the character work of these pieces. I probably won't use it to play chess, but I will definitely have it set up. So this runs through February 28th, 2013. So
all the month.
Mm-hmm. And you can back it and actually reserve a copy basically. But it sounds like this one is going to go through. As of this recording, their original goal was $5,000, and they've already made $8,000. So,
nice.
So check that out if Space Invaders or chess are interesting to you. And then we'll wrap this up with the Just checked out the trailer for the new season of Community, which that show comes back soon. Does it come back this week?
Yes, this Thursday. I've been waiting for it since whatever that date was last year.
So, I don't know where you're at, but I'm not impressed by this trailer. And
I haven't watched it yet.
Okay. I am worried about the show. Big Dan Harmon fan. Since his Scrubs days. But I mean, it looked like Community as far as like its silliness. Okay. But like they kick it off with basically a Hunger Games reference, which it's just kind of like, yeah, I get where you're going, but that's like that's a year too late. And I don't know. I'm being picky at the trailer, but I was happy to see. For some reason, I wasn't even sure if all the characters would be back, but as long as Troy's on the show, I'll be happy. So,
yeah, there's some shit apparently in season 4 about Pierce or Chevy Chase, as people might know him better. But apparently, I guess he drops off towards the end there somewhere.
Yeah, he's at least in the trailer. Yeah, I heard rumors that I thought Troy and then I thought Chevy Chase might not be coming back. So I'll be really curious to see how this season does, because it's kind of the next 30 Rock as far as like the show that I love that just it's not going to get the mass appeal that the ratings that they want to keep it around, and they keep trying to finesse it to get it to be something that it maybe wasn't meant to be. So we'll see what happens with Community this season. So.
Well, yeah, if season 4 turns out to be a bust or the quality dips, I mean, we got 3 good seasons, I think, of Community.
Mm-hmm.
I bought all those DVDs just because I'm like, I need to have the show in pristine form in case this dies. Because, yeah, they put a lot of talk into the ratings not being where they should be, and that just scared me. I'm like, I love this show. A lot of people, like, I've heard almost no one say bad things about Community.
Yeah.
And to know that NBC could axe it at any point because not enough people are watching. And we need more Biggest Loser.
I mean, it breaks my heart. It seems like these shows get replaced by reality shows. So, and I like my, you know, I like my well-done comedies. I'm not going to say I like every sitcom out there. I don't really, you know, outside of Modern Family and Community, 30 Rock, Parks and Rec, those are kind of my shows. So Parks and Rec seems to be fine for now, but like if both Community and 30 Rock fall off, I don't know. So so there's your NBC sitcom update brought to you by Horrible Nights Threesomes of the Week. But for the rest of Horrible Night, thanks to everybody out there for listening. We will be back live next week on Twitch TV with an episode of The Horrible Show, and the following week Super Gaming Best Friends returns live. Aaron, thanks for hanging out with us tonight.
No problem, Justin, it's been fun. Ni No Kuni talk forever.
Yeah, good luck good luck either getting wrapped up in that game or avoiding the game. I'm not sure where to
who knows what will happen. We'll have to see what game I'm logged into tomorrow night and then the following day.
But we will catch all of you next time. See ya.